Thank you for listening to the Cloverleaf Radio Network, where you can find shows such as The Hollywood Connection, Cloverleaf Radio, Night Moves Radio, and Soul Stories. You can find us on Facebook under the Cloverleaf Radio Network. We broadcast on Anchor, Blog Talk Radio, Spotify, iTunes, Google Podcasts, and many more. Tune in anytime during the week. We post our links. You can listen on your own time, on your own day, anytime you want. We provide you with new material every week. Thank you for listening. Have a wonderful day.
The night has come. A pale moon shines below, and the stars are twinkling lights. It must be time for Night Moves Radio. We'll be moving to the groovy music, getting lost in the words, and the entrance by timeless art. Good evening, and thank you for tuning in. We're glad that you've come to listen.
Welcome to another night of Night Moves Radio. This is Josh and I here today. I should say tonight, not today. And actually, it's starting to set a lot quicker now. It actually finally turned fall here. We had 70-some degrees weather yesterday. Air conditioners were running. And then today, we have 50-some degrees. We turned the heat on in the office where I work. Downstairs has not turned on the heat yet. He literally had central air running yesterday. So we've been freezing upstairs. I might plug in a space heater. I don't know. And then our kitty cats have been cuddling together on the chair, and I feel really bad for them. But we have plenty of blankets, and we'll just have to get our winter crap back out, right? Mm-hmm. What we're going to have on tonight is Vlad. He is a gothic magician, and he has said that he was born November 4th of 1431. He does gothic magic and vampire mystery, and he said he's kind of created like his own genre of magic. On his bio page, it says, "This charmingly dark and slightly twisted style known as gothic magic stems from the heart of classic horror genre. I can't talk tonight. This is awful. Yeah, I think something about me being going through all this stupid pain crap I've been having to deal with has really messed me up. Yeah. I can't talk right. But that's besides the point. I won't get into that. We've got, Vlad says kind of his performance that he creates is kind of like watching a Stephen King live. And that's kind of cool because I like Stephen King. Mm. I know Josh does too. He has like all of his books, right?
All of his horror and dark fantasy works I have. Yeah.
Oh yeah. So.
Yeah, so.
And Vlad, he has been entertaining audiences for over 30 years. Mm. We actually met Vlad at the Spook Show back in August. And I really liked talking to him. He's pretty cool. I hit it off with him. And then him and Vince Wilson often travel together. And so I kind of like all the gothic magicians that I've gotten to know. Ron Fitzgerald, and Vlad, and Vince Wilson. I kind of put them all together. I think it's kind of cool.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to bring Vlad onto our show. And we are going to start talking to him. So, good evening, Vlad, or Mr. Don. I don't know how to say your last name, so if you could pronounce that for me.
That's okay. When I'm performing and things like that, it's just Vlad anyway. So
okay,
just,
awesome.
We don't use the last name, so.
I don't blame you. I use mine a lot, though, just because it's unique, so.
There's a difference in, like, pay rate between my legal name and my stage name, so.
Totally understand. So tell our listeners a little bit about yourself, Vlad.
I'm, as you mentioned, a gothic magician, which was a style that I created when I first started doing magic. I was a special effects and sort of a person working at a haunted attraction. I was doing makeup and theming rooms and creating illusions in the rooms. And one of the people that worked for the haunted attraction knew a famous magician. His name is Jeff McBride. And he said, well, you know, you should maybe think about actually becoming a magician. And I said, well, I didn't really think you could become a magician. I thought that you had to be born into a magical family, and they brought you out to the sacred grove by candlelight. He's like, no, you go to meetings. You go to meetings and you study. And, you know, sometimes, like, you'll get a mentor that will teach you. So Jeff ended up becoming my mentor and bringing me into something called Mystery School, which was a school for magicians to explore where magic stems from. You know, sort of like we all just think about card tricks, but magic has a heritage in ceremonial and pagan traditions and things like that, with magic being reality in a lot of other cultures. So what Jeff was trying to do was get people together that actually lived magical lives and sort of put them in a room for dialogue with stage magicians, so we could talk about perceptions of magic, you know, why there aren't more women in magic, you know, how do you treat your audience, like all different questions that sometimes weren't being answered at regular magic conventions.
You know, I like that one question. You know, I often have wondered that, and I don't know if they give you an answer. Did they say why there isn't a lot of women in magic?
The best we can tie it down without actually, like, sort of, you know, trying to sit there and contemplate it was, early on, a lot of guys use magic as sort of a coping mechanism to introduce themselves to friends and to break the ice at parties, and women don't really need that. They just sort of naturally chat with each other, and sometimes there's an adversarial tone there, but they just normally talk to each other, and guys, when they meet each other, it's sort of like, hi, can I show you something cool?
Yeah, that's about right, actually.
So we were just like, you know, and I just, for myself, having come from haunted houses, when I started looking at magic, I'm like, I don't want to be the con man, and I don't fit into the wizard category. So what I did was I took my love of horror and, you know, vampires and things like that, and blended the haunted house immersive experience with magic. And instead of you trying to get over on people and con them, it was more like, well, can I show you an artifact I found at Waverly Hills Institute? You know, and then all of a sudden everybody's like, ooh, it's a haunted thing. You know,
so. Cool. So
that's where the Gothic came from. And a lot of my inspiration comes from Mary Shelley and Bram Stoker and, you know, Jekyll and Hyde and all the other good Gothic literature that's out there. And the Gothic term, like, just sort of naturally led itself to where I was coming from anyway, eerie and atmospheric, you know, not people sitting in front of Hot Topic with black nail polish on. But, you know,
real goth stuff.
Because that's what half the people go. They go, so gothic. You mean like Marilyn Manson?
Good grief.
Marilyn Manson isn't gothic. I'm like, if you want to use a term, he's like post-apocalyptic alternative.
Or industrial, as they say. Yeah. Industrial means. Yeah.
I'm like, it's not gothic. I'm like, if you want to go for a gothic band, go for like Bauhaus or Sisters of Mercy or something. Don't go with Marilyn Manson.
Yeah.
So that's the nutshell version of like what gothic magic is.
Yeah, you're more of like the classic gothic too, not more like all this artsy like the, you know, like you're talking about the black nail polish.
Yeah, when you look at the little terms, like they have all the little Facebook like surveys and things like that, I always come up as like what they call either Victorian goth or like romantic goth, because it's that whole like tradition of, you know, poet shirts and, you know, Edwardian and Victorian things, where, you know, the actual books were written during that period. So that's the era that I was shooting for.
Yeah, I did notice that about you when you came into the Spook Show. Your apparel, you know, I liked your style and, you know, how you dress, because it was more like, you know, classic, you know, back in, you know, those days. And I think I even told you that I liked the way that you were dressed. It was pretty cool.
Yeah, so I think some of the other people sort of looked at me like they thought I was an absolute nutcase. But
no, I kind of liked it. I thought it was pretty cool. I didn't think you were a nutcase. So, did you always have an interest in magic, or, I mean, how did this come about?
How did what come about? I'm sort of like, somebody's trying to call
Oh
me,
no.
like, and I told them, don't call me, and
That always happens.
I guess it doesn't, don't call, like, doesn't mean anything when I turn off the everything and, you know, things like that. It sort of like doesn't mean anything. It's just sort of like, don't call, and it's like, oh, okay, that means call.
You should have told him to call you then.
Feel like sort of like reaching through the phone going, yeah.
I get you. We don't, I don't even have a home phone hooked up anymore. I just, too many weird, I don't know, sales people that, yeah,
Yeah.
it's annoying.
They have all the wonderful, like, sort of, you know, robo screening things and stuff like that, and, you know, for it to be able to make sure you, but they still, you know, no matter the technology, they still sort of sneak through there somehow
I
anyway,
know.
so.
Yeah.
I was asking, did you always have an interest in, you know, being a magician, or is that something that came about later? How did you get into it?
Horror, yes, but magic, eh, not really. It was sort of like, because I didn't really know too much about it. My, you know, if you track down, like, you know, people that knew me, they go, oh yeah, you were sort of interested in it, but it was more of the horror things. I mean, I remember watching Frankenstein with my grandmother when I was about 5 years old, but magic was from, was when I was, I had just turned about 22 or something, and I was doing the haunted house, and figured out a way to blend the magic with the haunted things, you know. Because to me it was like I couldn't find the, how did I fit into that world? You know, I didn't see my, I'm just, having met me in person, you can probably tell I'm much more like Snape than I am Harry Potter. So
Yeah, you're not like Harry Potter.
yeah, so it's one of those type things. So, you know, the traditional magic thing didn't really, you know, and then I sort of went back and wrote my own bio, because people were like, well, if you want to perform as a persona, then you need to have your own bio created where you can tell your own story. And, you know, as an actor, it makes things much easier when you have an inner dialogue and you can answer, you know, what would be the natural things you would be attracted to? What would you like? What, why would you do this? And, you know, on my inner searchings, I sort of said, well, I think as a vampire, you would be really entertained by the fact of, you know, you've lived for a long period of time and having to deal with tax people and where your money comes from and everything else. I think it would be highly entertaining for an aristocratic vampire to go amongst the public and perform feats that they would see as stage illusion, but a vampire could just naturally do them.
Yeah, that's cool. I like that. Very
You know,
awesome.
because you're like, you're reading minds, you're controlling the elements, you're doing all those kind of things that, you know, vampires naturally are able to do. But, you know, everybody's like, oh, isn't that a cool magic thing? You go, yeah, sure.
So, Josh, is there anything that you'd like to talk to Vlad about?
I was wondering what is the most complex trick you've.
See, I don't do any stage illusion, so it was like sort of like I did one stage illusion one time, and it, I was asked to do a pee party for MGM Studios and Clicker when Lord of Illusions came out, and they were like, "Well, we want we're renting an entire club in New York City, and Clive Barker wants a magician, so we found you, and you do this, this, and this," and I said. You know, they had this like part of the original post, the Ten of Swords, with this sort of spinning thing, and the swords would fall down one by one, and it was sort of an escape. And then, you know, of course, you know, this is MGM. They're just like, well, we don't know because we usually have people do that stuff for us. And I go, well, I can tell you as a magician, it won't be cheap. And they said, well, what can you do that would mimic the feeling of, you know, Lord of Illusions? So I said, well, I can do a cremation. And they're like, well, what are you talking about? What is a cremation? And I said, well, traditionally it would be the magician comes on stage and brings the assistant out and puts her on a table and like folds the sides of the table up and uses a torch and sets her on fire, and then now there's a burned corpse there. And I go, well, but I said, but the problem with that is in comics, it doesn't really play for your show unless as the vampire I have two assistants and they come and kill the vampire.
Oh, that's very interesting.
So they were like, okay, you know, now meanwhile in Magic Illusion, like all of the blueprints for Magic Illusions are basically scaled for 5'3" girls that weigh about 75 pounds.
Good grief.
You know, they're like miniature cheerleaders. That's how most of these assistants look. Now we're talking about like somebody that's 6 foot tall and weighs, you know, 195 pounds at the time. So, you know, we're changing the dynamics a little bit. So, which means that the portable illusion that was there now becomes 7 foot long and ends up like the illusion itself weighs about 350 pounds.
Wow.
And we get to the location and they have no loading dock and they have no elevator. So we had to carry the illusion up like three flights of stairs to get to the area that we were doing the show. And so that was the last large scale illusion I ever did. So the other ones, I mean, I do different things. All of my things are themed around a story. Two of my signature effects that, you know, one is called the death card, and the premise is the person has died during their sleep, and I come to them and give them a chance to either complete their journey and go beyond the veil with me now, or they can play a game and try and gain their life back. So we play this game, and it has, you know, cards that look like coffins, and they end up like trying to win and gamble their life back. One of my other signature effects is an effect that deals with Countess Elizabeth Bathory.
Cool, very cool.
So I'm getting this idea, and I know it's not quite like dinner mystery theater, but I'm getting an idea of like if this were like maybe go on like during some kind of like dinner, like magician, how would you call it, like a dinner theater like idea feeling, and you would be up there like on stage, and then you've got like, you know, the dark stuff going around, like the, you know, you talk about the fog and all that coming in, but I can see people at dinner, and then you're on stage like after the dinner, and you're kind of like the show part of it. You've done stuff like that?
I do mostly what they call cabaret or parlor magic, which is small venues that sort of maybe, you know, there was a lovely theater here that seated about 100 people. And the nice thing was it was a bar that had a theater attached to it.
Oh, cool.
So the bar was all themed out in steampunk stuff, so they could sort of go have their libations, and then if they needed to use the facilities, they had to walk through TARDIS doors to get to the facilities. And then when they came back in, they entered into the theater, and it was sort of a small stage. And I mean, that's what I like doing is more. I mean, I've done a lot of different things where it's 200-300 people, but I mostly like things that are 100 or so because it's more intimacy.
Oh yeah, totally.
It's you don't have that fourth wall of things where, because I think most people when they see a large scale illusion show or a big magic show, sometimes they wonder, they go, well, I don't know, I think that probably the show might be the same tomorrow as it is tonight. You know, so they don't really feel that they're participating or in part of it. So I want to make it so it's personal, and I bring the people up, and that's why it's, you know, it's sort of, if I'm doing a routine and I tell you you died and you have to gain your life back, they really pay attention to that.
Well, yeah. Like with a smaller audience, you get to do, you know, have like a repertoire with them. And, you know, I mean, I could see that. You could kind of get to know them in like, you know, in a really short, you know, like basic way, but you kind of get to know some of their personalities a little bit. They get to know you, and it is more intimate. I could see why you would rather do that. It makes sense because it fits with the kind of style that you're doing.
It does, and I got to do a show a while back with a gentleman's name's Aiden Sinclair, that was doing shows for a long period of time at the Stanley Hotel in Colorado, which is famous from The Shining, and now is doing shows at the Queen Mary. But when we first met, he goes, "Oh, I want to bring you in and do a show." And he's like, "Well, I don't know what you, I've heard of you, and I know your reputation, but, you know," he's like, "do you mind being, I've never seen you perform, do you mind being the first act on?" So I said, "No, I don't really, it doesn't bother me what position I'm on in a variety show. First, middle, like beginning, middle, end, whatever. It doesn't, it's all the same." So he says, "Well, you go on first then." So I, we had, the audience was completely in darkness, and I had Johnny Cash's song playing, "Ain't No Grave Gonna Hold Me Down."
Awesome.
So we have the song playing, and then he says, I don't believe, like, he's like, "I don't believe you just pulled that off." He said, "There was complete darkness." He says, "You have this Johnny Cash song playing." He said, "And without a sound, somehow you made it from the back of the stage to the edge of the stage." So when the lights came on, you were staring directly at the front row.
Awesome.
He goes, "That was like the best, like, vampiric trait thing that I could ever hope for." He's like, "You got out there without a noise, and all of a sudden you were like right in their face." And I'm like, "Well, that's what I do."
Very cool. I was looking through, also through your bio, Vlad, and I saw you, I know you mentioned you were an actor and you've done some films. And I don't know if these are like indie films or, but I was kind of looking at some like The Citizen, Toxic Adventure, Vampire and Dead Body. I don't know if you want to talk about some of the films that you were in.
Yeah, the two, I mean, I did, I was an extra in a movie with Lisa Kudrow and Damon Wayans, which
really?
Is a comedy called Marcy X.
Huh.
And then I was in a movie called Citizen Toxie, which was Toxic Avenger Part 3, I think.
Uh-huh.
But that's a trauma film, which is definitely low budget.
Mm-hmm.
And the other one was Fairview Falls, which I played I guess as an actor, I sort of have to take credit for it, because the director says, out of all the roles like I've ever watched and I've ever seen actors do, he goes, "Your performance disgusted me the most."
Wow. Okay.
Because the character was this like sleazy, like sort of t-shirt wearing like dad that was like sort of trying to flirt with his like daughter.
Oh, okay.
And well, it leads up to the whole point. You have to get to the point where, like, the whole movie was based on all of these teenagers, like, flipping out and killing everybody in town.
Alrighty.
So the deal was, like, you know, why are they killing people? And it was like my character was, like, sort of flirting with her, and then as I turn around, she, like, kills me with an iron. So,
wow. Very.
He goes, you know what? He goes, I watched that part every time, and I almost feel like I have to take a shower after seeing it.
Oh, that is pretty bad.
You know, I pulled your role off then. Like, if you believed it, then I sold it. So.
Uh-huh. Well, that's pretty good then, if you sold it. Wow.
Yeah. And then I've done some off-Broadway things. Like, I did four different volumes of Tales from the Black Veil and the Gotham Chronicles, which were vampire plays in New York City.
Wow.
You know, and Vince kids around, because I go, "It was off Broadway," and he goes, "Yeah, everything that's not on Broadway is off Broadway." And I go, no, really off Broadway. I'm like, not like downtown like Mattoon. I said, when I say off Broadway, like I could come out of the theater and turn my head, and up the block, about half a block, was the Majestic Theater that had Phantom of the Opera playing.
Oh, my gosh.
So we were within sight of Broadway. Uh-huh. We just weren't on Broadway.
Totally, goes, yeah, got it.
Oh, okay. I guess that's slightly different. I'm like, yeah. It wasn't community theater, no. It wasn't.
I was also wondering, you've got under TV, Great Books, Dracula, TLC. Are we talking about... And this is going to be stupid. I'm sorry if I'm wrong. There's a cable channel down here called TLC. Are we I'm guessing it's a different kind of TLC.
It was the Learning Channel.
Yeah,
Yeah,
okay.
back when it was
Discovery.
the Learning Channel. Okay, so I am, that is a channel I'm thinking of. Okay. And what was that TV show?
They had done a thing, and they were trying to do like they were going through, and they had all of these intents of doing a great book of literature on the anniversary of each one of the books. Like, when it came time for the anniversary of the Christmas Carol, they would do stuff about Dickens, and they came down to one of the vampire clubs that I performed at in New York City
Oh, wow.
and sort of talked to a couple of the people, and like I did some magic. And the magic stuff they just had issues with because they wanted to shoot it a certain way, and I didn't want them to shoot it a certain way because I'm not going on television to expose stuff. It's like
Yeah.
if you're not going to follow my directions and shoot it from the angle that it needs to be shot at, like don't use it.
Yeah.
So, I don't think that'll, I don't know that, like I got credit for it. I got, the letter from them and everything else, but I don't know that they ever used the footage, but but it was fun because they actually came to, and a lot of people don't know that there are actually around the country actual vampire communities and vampire clubs.
Yeah, I've heard of them. I've seen the research and stuff. I've read some stuff. I know there are.
And it's a different thing. It's a subculture place, and there are different, there's different definitions of what people perceive or claim as being a vampire. And those clubs cater to, the people where it's a more or less like a, and I'm going to screw the whole because they keep adding more letters into it, like the LGBT, like Q community, like, it's like a safe space for people that are
Yeah.
interested in vampire stuff. So
Gotcha.
you can go there and, I apologize to all the people for, screwing up the letters in the
It's okay.
Every time I turn around, there's like another letter in there, and I'm like, okay, it's just
It's
continue.
hard to keep up with, I will say that, and I'm not meaning that in a mean way. I just there are just so many different kinds, I can't keep up with them all. So, I don't mean any
It's like
disrespect for
the
it.
culture is changing quicker than like our ability to comprehend like new
Yeah,
terms. So
I
it's,
know.
it's. But it's like in the vampire community, there are, same way as in, the different sexual communities. There, the vampire community, there are people that are basically like what we would call lifestylers or role players that are just interested in dressing up and being amongst vampires. And then there are people that are sanguine vampires that do in the midst of a, committed relationships, do exchange blood. And then there are people that are blood fetishists, which is more for the bondage community because for them it's a sexual thing where, they're sort of doing it as a kink. And then there are psychic or pranic vampires, which are ones that manipulate and exchange energy. So.
That's all very interesting. I didn't realize all that. Very cool. Interesting.
Because some people are like, oh no, vampires just drink blood. It's
Well,
like,
I know
no,
they don't just
lots
do
of
that.
different. Yeah.
I know there's, I like to read vampire stories. I have a lot of different vampire books that I have yet still start or finish, but there are some I've started. But I do like stories about vampires, so I do some research and I know a little bit about it. So, but.
Well, this way we can inform the rest of your like audience like that there are different like levels of vampires. So.
Oh yeah, and like I said, I myself knew that, and that way, if anybody else didn't, they would realize I knew they did more than just the whole drink blood thing. I think a lot of that's probably stereotypic from old movies and things like that.
Well, because it's been sort of, with all the like bloodborne diseases and things, people sort of like are more afraid of, that, and it's like the people that do that like have to be more medically aware, and that's why when I say it's a committed relationship because those people pretty much, go to doctors together and get screened and they use like lancets and things like that, which are medical, equipment, and there's a lot of things you have to be aware of, like if you're gonna walk down that path, know, it's not for everybody, you know, it's just...
Well, at least they're being responsible, you know, so that's a good thing.
Yeah. You hope.
Yeah.
I mean, it's, yeah.
And in the clubs, that was always the thing. It's like, you know, like, none of that in the clubs, like, that is for your own private, like, house, not to be done in the location.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because,
you know, you end up, like, having somebody touch somebody else's blood, and then all of a sudden now you're worried about, like, you know, so it's like, nope, that's sort of forbidden. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's understandable.
Yeah.
Josh, you have any other stuff you want to talk to Vlad about?
Besides vampires, what other gothic elements inspire you, like, from gothic stories?
The universal horror films, like the old school, like Dracula and Frankenstein and things like that, and sometimes I'll just find a historical story that fits into the time period, and recently Vince and I did a bizarre magic convention, which is the term like that other magicians sometimes use, is bizarre magic, but I didn't like the term, so that's why I created gothic magic, because to me, bizarre sort of like sounds like it could be like you bite the heads off chickens or something. You know? So, I'm like, no. So we decided to do one convention that we created, a few of us down in Myrtle Beach, and then Vince and I created another one that this year was in Gettysburg, and then next year we'll be in Baltimore because we have all of the lovely Edgar Allan Poe things that we can tie into it.
Oh, that's awesome.
But our thought was that if you're going to do and try and recreate the feeling of a haunted place for an audience, you sort of need to know what it feels like, the history behind it, and be able to visualize it instead of just saying, oh, I'm going to tell you a story about Gettysburg. And it's like, well, have you ever been there? Do you know what it feels like? You know, so we did the convention, and on the last day we took a bunch of people and actually brought them out to the battlefield and let them, like, sort of stand on the grounds by, like, where Ivor's Pit is and a lot of the other different places that are haunted and critical to the story of Gettysburg. But, like, you know, we brought them there and let them see what... And it was raining and foggy, and I'm like, this is probably what it would have looked like when you were trudging through, you know, on the battlefield.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's like, get used to. And next year we'll be doing the same thing with Baltimore, sort of bringing people to the Edgar Allan Poe house, bringing them to Edgar Allan Poe's gravesite. So letting them experience these places so they can, as a performer, be able to retell the story of why are these places, why do people consider them haunted? What do they feel like? What, you know, because now you can just relay the information rather than just sort of telling the story.
I think that's really cool. If I were ever in that area, I would have loved to do something like that. But sadly, I'm in the Midwest in the field of flatlands.
Yeah, you don't really, we were trying to hunt up, like, out for Mattoon. We're like, okay, so what are the stories out here? And, you know, on the way through, of course, we had to stop and, you know, do the Mothman thing in West Virginia. And we didn't get a chance to do the Flatwoods Monster, but, you know, we were coming through, and then Vince had mentioned it. And I think Vince was, like, the only one that was really familiar with it. And he goes, oh, the Mad Gasser.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even people that lived in Mattoon went, huh?
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, so people live here and they don't even know of a famous story that's there. I'm like, you know, it's like we had a couple people from England come over to the thing in Gettysburg, and that's why it was important that we bring them around. I'm like, because you probably in England, like, probably got maybe a half a day of history on the Civil War, because it wasn't that critical to you as being in England.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm like, now you can see what the whole story was about. And they're like, oh, thank you for sharing that.
That's really nice that you guys do that because people learn more about history. So not only are you like entertaining, you're also like informing and educating them.
Yeah, and it's like we try and do that with all the things we do. I mean, we don't want to, pull out a deck of tarot cards and bluff our way through it. It's like if you're going to use something, know the story of it. Know how other people perceive these things, like know meanings of the car. It's like don't sort of insult someone's traditions by like not knowing about it. And it's like, some people sort of don't realize that somebody in the audience probably knows as much as they do. So don't, don't like try and BS them. It's like make sure you have all your ducks in line before you actually, set about the journey, Try and find things. And that's why I was always trying, like I do, you were asking about other things. I've done some stuff about Gettysburg. I've done some stuff about some effects about Waverly. Like Edgar Allan Poe, there's a routine that I do where they have to try and figure out by their intuition how they think Edgar Allan Poe may have died. And during that whole thing, I can go through the thing and like sort of shatter some of their myths because a lot of people think that, Edgar Allan Poe was a drug addict and he was a drunkard. And it's like,
No, he just had a
no.
really tough life.
Yeah, and it's like all of that stuff was disproved. So now during this effect, I can sort of shatter some of these myths, and it's, I mean, even when I was living up towards like and doing shows in Salem, Massachusetts, you'd get tourists that come up and they'd go, "Oh, so can you tell me where they burned the witches?"
Oh,
They didn't
jeez.
burn them.
Good grief.
They
I'd
hung
go,
them.
and I'd sort of turn them and I'd go, "You see across the water there? That's Europe. That's where they burned them." I said, over here, they were hung. One person was pressed to death. Like, there were probably more that we'll never know about that died of starvation in the prisons. But, like, one person was pressed and the rest were hung. And that's the story, And they go, and it's some people don't even realize. They're like, well, why did this all happen if they weren't actually witches? I go, because all the way through from the medieval period up into, the Salem witch trials, if you were accused of something, the town or whoever was accusing you got everything you owned. I'm like, so if someone accused you, they stood to probably profit from getting your property and things because all of that stuff would be taken away from you.
Yeah. Well, it's
I
kind
mean,
of like
what?
back then, just like now, the different kinds of things that there are. People were probably uninformed of exactly what they were doing or what they were. So then they just automatically saw it as a negative thing, and that's probably why the things that happened happened.
Well, I'm surprised when I was, when I was doing, I have another thing I had done was I was a tour guide for a haunter friend of mine had created a dungeon for the New York Renaissance Fair. And so we gave tours of the dungeon and like sort of explained all of the torture implements. And a lot of the people had no clue about the Inquisition. They're like, so when you talk about the Inquisition, who was that? And I go,
Oh my God, who? Really? Who?
I go, the church? And they'd really look at you with this disbelief and they go, no, the church wouldn't do that. And I go, yes, they would.
Yeah, the church was very strict back then. It was bad.
I'm like, let me tell you about it. I'm like, and I started describing these things and I go, the only thing that the church could not do through the Inquisition was all of these tortures, they could not spill blood. I said they had to be, it had to deal with pressure, burning, dislocation, squatting over something. I said all of the things that have to do with cutting or piercing, that was created by royalty because they didn't have that sort of little thing where they didn't have to worry about spilling blood. And I go, but the church even found ways around that. I go, there was this thing over here, this spiked chair. I said, do you see all those lovely spikes on it that when you sit down, pierce your flesh? And they go, yeah. And I go, that was created by the Inquisition. And they go, well, I thought you said that they couldn't spill blood. I go, you know how they got around it? They would put trays of hot coals underneath the spikes. So when you sat down, it would pierce your flesh, but it would cauterize the wound at the same time.
Oh my goodness. Yeah. I remember a while back, I know we were, I don't know, somehow Josh and I got on the topic. I think some of my old poetry had some people getting tortured, and he kind of gave me a lesson on some of the torture devices. And I have seen quite a few of them, and they're really quite haunting.
A lot of people, for some reason, and I guess, you know, when you start investigating horror and darker stuff through horror movies and stuff, you understand those things and you're more likely to investigate them.
Uh-huh.
But regular people, for some reason, don't have any clue about, like, the details about the Jack the Ripper murders or H.H. Holmes or Ed Gein, who was the basis for Psycho and
Leatherface. You know, wasn't he Leatherface?
Leatherface.
Yeah.
So it's like, you know, they don't have any clue about these things. You know, it's like to them, you know, Jack the Ripper just sort of went around cutting people's throats. And I'm like, oh no, it was a little more gruesome than that. You know, they just don't, it doesn't have any bearing on their everyday lives. So,
yeah.
I guess my job is to remind them that there still might be monsters under their bed.
Yeah. That's kind of like why I do like the dark history and horror and like what Brian Ward tries to do amongst just like the horror and stuff in that convention. He does try to find authors who do write about the history of that so that people who come can be educated about that. So it's not just about scaring people. It's also about education. So, and people like him, people like you, you know, you're also educating people. So they're not like being ignorant about, you know, all that stuff.
Yeah. And, you know, to me, it's like, it's more of a, you know, it's like as an entertainer, how are you gonna, you need to bring them and fully explain the scenario. You know, it's like you don't want them to go into seeing, you know, a performance of Les Mis and not know what the French Revolution is.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Totally makes
sense. You have to inform them, put them all on the same page, and then now you're sort of creating more of a fulfilling experience, because I want each of my pieces to be its own like sort of mini vignette.
Mm-hmm.
So they can each stand on their own, but I can piece them together where if I need to come up with a whole show about, you know, Victorian murders, I can. If I want to put together a show based on witchcraft, I can. If I want to put together, you know, so I can pick and choose the different things and have an entire evening based on that theme. But most of the time, if I'm not asked to do that, I want to sort of give people a roller coaster ride.
Oh,
so I'll
totally,
have a little bit of each thing, so.
Yeah, I'm really glad that you do that, Vlad. I'm glad for you and all the other ones that do that. Before we end the show, is there anything that you would like to tell our listeners? If you have any websites, your upcoming events. I know you talked about the one at Myrtle Beach. If you want to tell our listeners about.
My website is gothicmagic.com. So that's for me. Or they can find me on Facebook as the Gothic Magic of Vlad. The one in Myrtle Beach you just spoke about is January 17th through 20th of 2019, and that's in Myrtle Beach, and that's a, you know, workshops and lectures and shows and an entire, you know, 3 or 4 days of performance and strangeness with vendors and everything else.
Mm-hmm.
And then the one that I'm doing with Vince, is a part of the East Coast Spirit Sessions, but He's not one of the ones that helped create it. Him and I created the Bizarre Hauntings, which will be in Baltimore this year. And he's really excited about the hotel because it's at the Lord Baltimore Hotel. And they've been really welcoming, and there's a restaurant bar atop the hotel. And, you know, we're going to go roam the streets and go to Fell's Point, and he found a place that actually has absinthe on tap, so we can go see Edgar Allan Poe's grave and sip absinthe. And that's in August 22nd through the 24th of 2019, and that's called the Bizarre Hauntings Convention.
Cool. Sounds pretty awesome.
Yeah, we try and do it, you know, a little bit of everything. And, you know, we have stuff for everything if people don't want to buy magic. You know, last year at the Bizarre Hauntings, we had a one of the wives of one of the magicians made all kinds of Victorian sort of gothy and mourning hats. So there were these like hats with veils and all kinds of different things. And, you know, she got into the whole thing and was quite successful selling like, these, like Victorian hats.
Awesome. Very awesome. Yeah. Well, thank you so much for coming on to Night Moves Radio, Vlad. I've enjoyed meeting you in person at Spook Show, and I've enjoyed talking to you tonight. I do find you to be quite interesting, and hopefully at some point, if they can make it, you know, to where it could benefit both you and Vince, it would be awesome to see you guys again.
Yeah, I think we're gonna. I think we're shooting for, like, we're tentatively, unless they decide that, you know, we're on our own, they, mm-hmm. we're tentatively on the schedule for SilCon.
Cool.
So we won't be back probably, you know, because we don't know what's happening with some of the other ones, but
yeah.
we will be tentatively on the schedule for SilCon.
Awesome. So, very cool.
But, it was a pleasure getting to speak to both of you, and, you know, anytime, you know, feel free to pop by my website if you have any other questions about any of the other stuff. And,
okay. You know, well, we'll definitely put your website up on the Night Moves Radio Facebook page, mm-hmm. and we'll get the link up here within before the night's over, you know, for the show for other listeners to hear. And you'll also be, so we'll get you all over. You'll be out there.
Yeah.
Excellent. I appreciate it.
You're quite welcome.
You know, that's my desire, is to go all over the country and spook everybody out.
Awesome. That's always fun.
So, it was entirely a pleasure to meet both of you on the air. And mm-hmm. I met you in person, but now I've met you on the internet, too.
Yes.
Awesome. Yeah, it was a great pleasure. Thank you for coming on, Vlad.
You're very welcome, and I will speak to you again soon.
All right. You have a good evening.
Good night.
Thanks.
Good night.
Take care.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye.
That was the great Vlad, the Gothic magician. And so we'll stay tuned for our next show. Just watch for us on Facebook, Moose Radio, or on the Cloverleaf Radio Network. Everyone have a good evening. Good night.
Good night.
Would you like to sponsor the Cloverleaf Radio Network? We'd love for you to be our friend. We have several packages available, and some start out just as low as 99 cents a month. All you need to do is to click on that little link that you see that says Support Our Network. You can support our network for 99 cents a month, $4.99 a month, or $9.99 a month. But if you be our best friend and you sponsor us for $9.99 a month, you'll get to be a part of Cherry House Press, which is another company part of the Cloverleaf Radio Network. We'll send you the newest published book every time that we published, just because you decided to be our friend for $9.99 a month. We thank you for listening. Have a wonderful day.